Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast and YouTube channel. Listen, make sure you subscribe today. You can go to iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go to our YouTube channel, True Underdog, or you can visit trueunderdog.com and subscribe to all of it.
Damn, 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 True Underdog. Damn, damn, unleash damn, the power within. Damn, damn, damn. Damn.
Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast. I am super excited today. I've got a special guest today that really defines the word entrepreneur. He is an entrepreneur. He's a mentor. He's a podcaster and a philanthropist. He's founder of Stearns Lending, new founder and CEO at Kind Lending, star of Discovery Channel's Undercover Billionaire, and founder of Underdog BBQ in Erie, Pennsylvania. Anything with underdog in it, I love it. But Glenn Stearns, how are you doing, man?
All right. How you doing, Jason? Nice to see you again.
Good. I'm excited. Like undercover barbecue. We're definitely going to have to get into that because I love barbecue and I love underdogs. But, you know, listen, you have done a lot of great things, and we shared a room together in Clubhouse not too long ago. And I appreciate your feedback out there. I appreciate some of the mentoring you gave to the folks out there, but let's talk about your life and how, you know, it was quite disruptive. You were born to alcoholic parents, diagnosed with dyslexia, and failed fourth grade. You also fathered a child at 14, graduated high school at the bottom 10%. You even lost friends to drugs. Can you describe these early days for what it was like?
I mean, listen, they were a normal everyday life for me, right? I mean, you only know what you know. You don't get to grow up in two different worlds and see that one may be a little dysfunctional. I loved my childhood. I was, you know, into a lot of trouble. You know, you just know your surroundings, and that's what happens in those types of situations, right? And it was probably after, like you said, you know, I didn't have a traditional childhood and failing fourth grade and having a child in eighth grade. But once I got into college, and by the way, I went to college because I was chasing a girl. I didn't go there because I was Mr. Smart guy, right? And but I did that, and I was still following in my dad's footsteps, going out partying every night, doing those kind of things. And then just one night, laughing at somebody getting a drink thrown on them or getting slapped by a girl or something, I realized, boy, this is boring. You know, I've done it over and over again every night in a dark cave of a bar. I don't want to do it anymore. You know, it just kind of had this moment of clarity and a deep fog, you know, it was just stop, don't do this anymore. And that kind of was the day that changed my life, sort of.
You know, I had a child at 17. I was 11th grader, and that was hard. You know, my wife, we're married now, we have four kids and two grandkids, but she was a sophomore. And so to have a child at 14 and still, and have the childhood that you grew up with your parents, I mean, with alcohol abuse and things that you see around you, you're right. When you live in that world, you think it's normal. I mean, I thought my life was normal, and I've lost friends to drugs. There were four of us that hung out through middle school and high school. We're best friends. I got one left. And it's crazy how our worlds completely change. And yeah, I just want the listeners and viewers out there to understand that, you know, here you are with everything against you. You could have ended up dead on the streets on drugs, in jail, all kinds of, you think of it, the bad could happen, and you found a way to get out. Even though you partied some, you had this wake-up call that said exactly what to you. Like, what was it? Did you see something that just triggered you? I know you saw someone party laughing, but what was your vision for the next couple of years for yourself when that epiphany hit?
Yeah, you know, I was tired of being tired, right? You know, I was just tired of waking up and feeling bad, and it didn't feel like there was, you know, any great future for my life. And yet all of these times growing up, it was weird these weird moments, I'd have people just come to me and say, you know what, Glenn, I see something in you. And, you know, one day you're going to be a leader. And I've had that happen to me when I was about 14, right around the time I got the girl pregnant. I had that happen to me the second year I got into college, when I started a fraternity, and people would do this. And I started realizing, you know, maybe I can prove them right, you know? And I didn't know what they saw in me, but it was at a moment where I would say, gosh, you know, I was embarrassed. I didn't, oh, thanks, but don't, you know, come on. But then at the same time, I thought I really would love to prove them right and be something that is exceptional. And so I started thinking maybe I could, you know, and just those little tiny seeds that get planted. That's why I love mentoring young kids, right? And that's also why I lead with vulnerability a lot of times, because, okay, I've got fancy cars and houses and boats and planes and lots of toys, but that usually shuts people down, actually. They go, gosh, you know, I can't do that. That's too far away. But if you lead with all of the things that other people can relate to, right, which is maybe you didn't have the best childhood. Maybe you're not making a ton of money now. Maybe you didn't have a great education, you know, and then you realize, well, you can do anything if you surround yourself with the right people, right? You put the balcony people in your life instead of the basement people, and you just start really doing things out of the comfort zone of normal people and say, I'm going to put myself out there and really try. And when you do that, exceptional things can happen.
You know, I think, did your parents graduate high school, college? What was the income like growing up?
Yeah, my mom cleaned houses. She graduated high school. My dad, I'm almost positive, graduated high school. I still have never really asked him, but I think he graduated high school. And then he was a printer. So yeah, blue collar background, you know, not a lot of inspiration for me to move on to go to college. You know, when I said I wanted to go to college, they said, well, why don't you go to the, you know, the junior college here? You know, it wasn't like go off and do something. That was right when my parents got a divorce too. So right when that happened, they were also like, well, you know, we can't pay for that. Right. So I had to go and pay for my college and get student loans. And, you know, I graduated with a 2.1 in college. Okay. So I wasn't like a stellar student there either, but I learned how to pay for college in college, right? I learned how to fill out papers for Pell Grants and other things. And so that to me was the education that I needed, was how to live through the world of lots of red tape, I guess, you know.
Was there, you talk about vulnerability, what about starting to become successful or going to college and finishing? Did you feel, because I think our childhoods are somewhat similar, did you feel a little insecure or embarrassed because you did something more than your parents and you were on a journey to be more and maybe felt bad for them or felt, because I used to have this feeling of like, I don't know if I want to tell them that, because it's not like they looked down on me, but it felt weird to be at a different spot where they almost boxed me in like I shouldn't be there. Did you ever get those feelings?
Yeah, it's so funny. Well, when I graduated college, I didn't know if I'd graduated or not because I did horribly on a certain class and they hadn't told me or not, right? So when I went through my graduation, I felt like a fraud. Like, did I really graduate or not yet? You know, I wasn't told, and then I would find out after. And so that was kind of weird because I mean, you know, inevitably I would have, because it was just one class I would have to take over. But that was a bad day for me. I just remember not feeling good, like, you know, hey, I deserve this yet. But when I went out to California and I got into the mortgage world and I started making money, there came a point where I went to a therapist and I sat down with this woman and I said, you know, listen, I am making more money than my dad ever made, obviously more than my mom. And I don't know if I know it's not going to last. I think it's going to blow up. You know, I'm just waiting for something wrong to happen here. And she says, why? And I said, because everything's going right. And I just can't go right like this. And the woman, it was so wonderful. She says, you know, I'm going to do you a favor. I said, what's that? She goes, I'm going to kick you out of my office. She goes, get out of here. Do not self-sabotage yourself. You deserve everything you're doing. You're working your ass off. Now go out there and grab it and get it and feel proud. And, you know, it was a one. I mean, I needed that, right? Instead of, here, let me milk you out of, you know, more hours. She's like, get out and stop feeling sorry for yourself. And you deserve everything you've got. And so, yeah, I felt this weird sense of, do I belong, and is it okay that I'm in this world? And it took a while really to understand that, you know, we carve out our own lives and then we should be proud of where we are, or we should keep hustling to get farther along, you know?
No, that you it's like, I can totally relate to exactly what you're talking about. That feeling of being in waters you're not used to, and do I belong? Is this okay? It doesn't feel right. Like, why me? What did I do so great? You know, even though I'm working hard and I'm busting my butt, it was hard for me to accept what I've earned. You know, it almost made me feel like I shouldn't, like I ashamed that I was successful. I used to feel ashamed that I was successful early on. And I had siblings, and one of my siblings, really, my success was his failure. So that made it even harder to talk about. Did you have anything like that with family members?
There are so many people I've mentored and I've been with that they have decided it'd be better. They don't say this, they just do it, where it's better to just fail so that they don't have the issues with their family. And I'm like, you have everything it takes. You're so smart, so driven, and then you blow it all up. Like, why, you know? And I had a sister that, it's funny, I remember one time she said to me, you can't be always so happy and up, Glenn. You know, it just is not natural. She said, you know, every time I see you, you've got this good smile on your face and you're doing well. And what are you hiding? Right. And I said, do you think, her name is Sue. I said, Sue, do you think that there are chemicals in your brain that can make you depressed? She says, of course. I said, well, maybe I have chemicals that make me happy. I said, maybe I am in a weird spot also, but I happen to have the opposite effect. I go, I'll take it. Because you know what? I don't sweat the small stuff. I don't. There's no need to. I can't control it. So why am I going to worry about it? And I said, so I just live a pretty happy life. And I found out later she had been struggling with alcohol and drugs herself. You know, she fell into that. And she said she had been in a dark place at that time when those kind of thoughts were in her head about me. And she's a wonderful, wonderful lady now. But we all go through our dark moments. We all have our own demons and things we go through. And you never know where someone else is. You never know what's going on in their life.
Yeah. Well, you were once quoted saying it's important to put your people first, which I 100% believe in. To the listeners out there, explain, what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, it's funny. I spent 25 years growing a company that became the largest in the country at lending. It dominated in mortgage banking for brokers. We were huge and we made a ton of money. And all I could think about was, again, weird thoughts were like, okay, some regulator is going to come and shut me down or put a $100 million fine against my company, or something's going to happen that is going to ruin all this great stuff. When I sold my company, I had 6 people out of close to 2,000 leave that year. That was it, right? I mean, people have to, they move on, they retire, whatever. But we didn't have a high turnover. About 3 years later, I was still on the board of the company, even though I'd sold. And they were talking about, oh, we have about a 37% attrition rate and this and that. And at that time, they had like 3,000 people. And I stopped them. I said, wait a minute, can you back that up? What you just said was over 1,000 people left our organization in a year. How many people do we need for onboarding, offboarding, training? You know, I mean, what all the institutional knowledge that is left, like why? And so when I redid the company and went back at it again this time, right, it was for a completely different reason. And I believe you think about anything we do in life, right? There's always, well, I shouldn't say everybody, but there's a high need for validation. Right? Like, look, I had an idea in 1989. I started this company and now one of the largest private equity groups in the world wants to buy me. That feels good. An idea has turned into somebody else is willing to pay money. And so we all, I think a lot of us get that where you feel good that somebody else validates you. And so I did that. I got a lot of money. And now I go back at it with the new company and I don't want to be public. I don't want to be owned by private equity. I don't want investors, because I spent 50% of my time dealing with analysts and other people that are going to be going in and looking at your business. I loved what we had. It was fun. It was a family. It was, we were breaking records. We were changing the industry. That felt fun. So now when I go back at it this time, it's like, all right, I'm focused inward. I want the people that are spending 12, 14 hours a day happy. This is, if you're going to spend more time with us than your family, I want to make sure that this is something that's going to change your life, right? So by focusing that way, by having servant leadership, by working for them so that they can live a better life, everything thrives. Your company thrives, your people are happy, and the customers win. And so it works. And so by doing that and putting those people first over profits, not worrying about that, it all tends to work out the way that you'd like to see them, because everybody's rowing in the same direction. We have people print on the backside of the paper. They don't waste. They turn the lights out. All those little things. But when you go and you work off of a misery index, how miserable are you? I'll give you a little more money and hopefully you'll stay. Those people are not loyal. They don't, they're exhausted. They're tired. They're angry. I don't want to be around that. I'm not doing it for that. I'm doing it because I want to change the industry. I want to have fun. I want to laugh. And we've lightened it up. And by the way, if you don't like that, if you don't like the fact that we're the anti-mortgage banker, that we have a company, you know, our portal for the broker to come in to and bring their business. We call it the quickie, right? Happy beginnings, happy endings, right? We have all kinds of, and we laugh at ourselves. All right, if that's not for you, don't come here. If you don't want to laugh, have fun. And, you know, if you're, and it's okay. Everybody's different. You know, you got to be in a suit, got to be all tight. Nah, forget that.
That's pretty cool. I think that you care. You've already been there. You've already accomplished selling the business, and now you're building something. You're having fun again. I love that. The quickie, happy beginnings and happy endings. That's classic. So I can't have you on without talking about Undercover Billionaire, right? So anyone that's listening who hasn't heard of this show, you know, Glenn was dropped off in Erie, Pennsylvania to see if he could turn $100 and an old pickup and a cell phone into a $1 million evaluation in 90 days. How did this opportunity come about? What was the experience like?
Well, the condensed version, I had been asked to do a show 15 years ago with my wife. They called us out of the blue, and we did it. It was called The Real Gilligan's Island. It was a reality game show. I ended up winning the whole thing and donate the money to charity. I didn't do it for the money. And then for 15 years, different production houses kept calling me up. Hey, do you want to do another show? You know, we got an idea. And they'd always run stuff by me. And I'd say, you know, I don't like that, or what, or maybe I did or whatever. But then I'd always return that, you know, going, hey, I got an idea for you. You know, I don't like your idea, but I tell you what, if you want to drop me off in the middle of nowhere, no money, no contacts, you know, and I'll start over and I bet you I can do it again. And so I would always say that. And then one day they called me back and they say, hey, if you're serious, Discovery said, put your money where your mouth is. And I said, all right, let's do it. And what I loved about it is I didn't give it much more thought. And this is how my life usually goes. Like, I'm not a big planner. So I just sat there and said, I'll do it. And I was down in Florida on our boat, and nice boat, right? Got a helicopter on it. I went around the world on it, you know, not a little boat or anything, but I'm out there. I'm with John Elway. We're skiing and jet skiing and doing all this stuff. And along come the crew, and they're like, hey, it's time. We're coming to get you, and we're going to take you to an unknown place. I jump on the line with Richard Branson, and I say, Richard, I'm about to do this crazy thing. You think I'd do it or not? He's like, hell no. I would never want to do that. Why in the world do I do it? Elway, hell no. I'd never. And all of a sudden I start scratching my head going, why are two guys that have been, you know, pretty big risk takers in their life, why are they telling me don't do this? And I started trying to think, what is my upside, right? I've already done it. Now, all I'm going to do is have a big potential to fail in front of the world. Why do I want to do that? You know? So I did it anyway. And one of the best things I ever did in my life.
And that business, you decided to open up Underdog Barbecue as part of the business plan. How's that going now?
Wonderful. You know, it was, but it wasn't so much about the business as it was the journey, right? You know, I got out there, I didn't know anybody. All of a sudden I'm sitting trying to figure this out. I put a team together. I did a bunch of things that worked and then a bunch that failed. And in the middle of the failure, I'm sitting there thinking, again, the whole world is watching me. I'm in a deep hole and this time I'm not getting out. And so I like that feeling. I like knowing, all right, back's against the wall. What are you really made of, right? It's not, you don't shine when the world is on your side and you got a bunch of money and let's give it to charity. I mean, that's wonderful and you should do that. Too much is given, much is required. I get it. But who are you when everything's going wrong? That's the guy I like to analyze and, you know, and try to figure out. So, you know, I went through all those processes and ended up at the end with a restaurant that is thriving today, thriving, like doing really, really well. If you haven't seen the show, you can watch it on, you know, the Undercover Billionaire season 1. And then I did another show that's airing right now. Every Tuesday night, we're in the third or fourth week. And it's called Undercover Billionaire Comeback City. And so if you want to know the ending of the story of Underdog, watch the 6th episode of Comeback City, as I won't give it away.
I'm going to have to check that out because that sounds exciting. But that the name of the business is really what you like. You like the challenge. You like to be told you can't. You like the struggles. You like to see what you're made of. And there are certain entrepreneurs out there that go out there, and if it gets a little dicey and a little hard, they're going to pivot, and they're going to change, and they're going to adjust, and that's okay. But there are some. I think I'm one of them. I think you're one of them. It's a lot of it because of our upbringing. It's some of the things that we've seen and told that we can't, and all the challenges against us, right? Especially you, 14, having a kid. Like, I couldn't even imagine. I was 17, and my whole world changed. But you love that. Like, that is your mantra. That is my giddy up right there. Like, tell me I can't, put the weight on me. I love the pressure. I want it on my shoulders. Give me the chance. I want it to be on me. I don't want to be upset with anybody else. Put it all on me. Let me make that decision. That's how you feel, right?
Well, you know, it's funny. Maybe that's why I'm so good friends with Elway, because when it was the fourth quarter, and there's 2 minutes remaining and they're down by 6, he always wanted the ball, right? And it's like, I don't necessarily want to be in a hole, but I realized everyone I'd ever admired, the reason they were as strong as they were and they had the integrity and they had the people in the community look up to them was because of the times they dug themselves out of the hole and that they did do it with class. And so I always thought when I got in that hole, all right, it's my time to shine. It's my time. And so, I'm not looking for holes, right? I'm not looking, but when I'm there, I might as well, enjoy it, right? And it's funny, when I look back on my life, I was about 5 years old and my mom would take my sister and I, put us in the car, and she'd go, "Let's go, kids, we're going to get lost." And we'd drive and drive and drive and get to some farm and pull over, and she'd go, "Oh no, guess what?" We go, "We're lost." And then we would find our way home, and it was so fun, right? And so what I realized when I look back is I was conditioned early on from that. I was conditioned from being a failing fourth grade. I was conditioned because of having a child that every time I got lost, every time something happened like that, I realized, wow, what an excitement it's going to be, because around the corner is something great. It's not a train, right? Going to run me over or whatever. Because each time it worked out, I've got a beautiful daughter. I ended up with great friends that I'm still friends. I have 52 of them coming to my ranch from my fourth grade class, right? So, well, actually all the way to 8th grade. So anyway, I have them going to Montana with me this summer. So, I mean, I ended up having wonderful things happen out of this craziness, right? And so if you out there, if there are people that, you know, have things happen, you got to look for the silver linings and you got to condition your brain every time you're in the crapper that, you know, there's something good going to come out of this if you allow yourself to just open your mind and find it, right? Instead of be the victim, oh no, and just sit back and feel like you lost. That's not, you know, it's the time to grow and work hard and not avoid people, but, you know, communicate.
Well, I think you're exactly right. I think failure really isn't failing if you try. It's just different results and you got to learn from those. And I think when you don't try or you quit, that regret haunts you forever. Now, you had and beat cancer twice. So congratulations, man. That's probably the biggest accomplishment that I see here about you. When you were first diagnosed, you commented that you remember really thinking about it kind of like a business. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I ended up getting cancer and all of a sudden it was kind of, they told me it was probably a 50-50 shot, right? And unless it was a certain one and they'd find out in a 4 or 5 days of testing, it ended up being another kind, thank goodness, which was like an 85% chance of survival. So that felt better. But as I sat there for a while, I said, okay, this is like, what do I need to do? I got to give it my best shot. So I went out and I researched everything. What was the best hospital? And I went to MD Anderson. I lived down there. The best radiation method for me was proton therapy. The insurance company wouldn't pay for it. Most people aren't in the position I was in, which, you know, I said, I'll pay it myself, right? Which, so I'm very blessed for that. But, you know, I just looked at it like, okay, what do I need to do? Everything I can do with Western medicine, I will do. Now, there's a lot of people that believe in all this Eastern stuff, and that's great. I said, look, I'm doing all Western. And then if you want me to pray to Mecca, you want me to spin around 4 times, jump up on my leg, you want me to put needles and acupuncture, whatever you want me to do with Eastern medicine, I'll do it. But I'm doing all the Western stuff too, right? And so I did it all, right? I was like, I'm not letting anything go because I don't want to take a chance, you know? And you watch some people, even you look at Steve Jobs, right? You know, probably might have had a different outcome had he, you know, approached it differently. So you never know.
Yeah. So Glenn, you're also in the podcast space with your podcast called Grit Happens. What's it all about?
Well, you know, it's funny because after the show, and it aired all over the country, it ended up being one of Discovery's, it was their biggest show since for the last 5 years. So Deadliest Catch and a couple of the other ones have been around for a while, Naked and Afraid. And the other one, I can't remember the name of it, but so this became one of their biggest shows. They ended up doing a couple seasons now so far on their third season. And so all these people have been asking me advice and mentoring and stuff. And I thought, man, we've got a lot of cool friends. You know, I mean, I've got a lot of friends, people that have walked the moon, the people that are great actors and big business tycoons and you name it. I said, why don't we drag them in here? And I've spent many a night, late night, getting information out of a lot of these people that other people would just die to hear. So, well, let's just see if we can't pull it out of them in a podcast, right? And so we've had a lot of fun so far doing that. And we're kind of continuing that with really finding people that are other big mentors and have something to say. And so it's been fun.
That is exciting. And you co-host that with your wife, right?
Oh, yeah. She carries me. She's the real deal. So I just kind of get to be her sidekick almost, you know?
I love it. I have fun doing the podcast thing. You know, I've had some cool guests and real relationships, and I feel like I get coached and I can coach people all the time, bringing it on. It's exciting to hear different walks of life and how they got from A to Z and their journey of taking the stairs. So, you know, I've got one last question. I wrote a book recently. I'm finishing it now. It's my first book because I never even read a book. But now I've got my book finished and I've got some chapters in there. And I was on a clubhouse last night with some cool entrepreneurs. And I would give them a certain comment or chapter in my book and say, what does this phrase mean to you? So I'm going to ask you, one chapter I have in there is called Don't Be Held Hostage. What would that phrase mean to Glenn Stearns?
Don't be held hostage. I would say that a lot of times we have lived our lives with this sense of when you start accumulating things, you don't want to let them go. You don't want to lose them. So the more that you've had success, then the more we become a much more of a very conservative human being. And we lose some of our things that we did that made us feel alive and grow, right? And so I've watched this happen over and over. You get older and you just tighten up. When you're young, you have nothing to lose, right? You don't have a lot of net worth. You don't have things. So you take chances and you go for it. And when I look back, the taking the chance, the problem solving, when things don't go well, that was the fun part of it all, right? When I think of 2008, when the world blew up and everything I had to do to fight for everything, fly to New York City, sit with Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, Morgan Stanley, and fight when they told me I owed them $50 million, $25 million, all this money for bad loans. And when I mean, everything that happened, and I thought, what horrible, you know, I never want to go through that again. And then when I got cancer, I'm like, that was the most fun I'd ever had when I look back on it. So I think we're held hostage sometimes to the fact that we are afraid that we're going to fail. And if we're afraid we'll fail, then we won't try anymore. And so I just always tell people, don't let fear and don't be held hostage to an idea. You are going to go out there and your life, you're going to feel so much better when you put it on the line. I'm not saying risk everything again. I'm saying, but don't be afraid. Like I went out there with Undercover Billionaire and threw it all on the line. And I'm more proud of that than anything I've done because yeah, I could have looked like a loser in front of the world, but you know what? I would have looked like the guy tried his ass off the whole way, you know, and I'm proud of what happened out of it. So yeah, don't be afraid to live life because you're thinking, you know, you're going to lose a couple bucks or something.
I love it. I love it. And everybody's perspective of that is so different, but yet the same. And when I wrote it, it was really, it's similar to that, but it's don't be held hostage in a relationship or in your business, scale everything, right? You don't want to be held hostage by your top sales reps. You know, it's a, you have to build systems there. You don't want to be held hostage because of fear in a relationship. You know, I have to be with somebody because of this, or I have to have a partnership because like those are the things. So you touch base on that really good. I appreciate that. So how can everybody find you, Glenn?
How can they find me? Well, you can go to Instagram, Glenn Stearns. I just got that back. Somebody, speaking of being held hostage, they stole my own name from
me.
What? Yeah, I know. And I just got verified. I didn't know what that meant, but now I'm back and I'm well,
congrats. I'm cool. That's a Thank big you. Deal. Now, with the blue check, my kids actually talk to me now because I have a blue check. Before they did.
I had no idea even that there was one, you know? So luckily I've got a few people that are behind the scenes doing a lot of that stuff for me, but all of it is GlennStearns. And that's Facebook, Instagram, all the other guys, you know, ones you can find me on all that.
And they got to check out the Undercover Billionaire on Discovery. And now
please go to Discovery, go to Discovery Plus and you can binge it or you can go to Hulu or couple of the other places.
And make sure you check out Glenn's podcast, Grit Happens. He's got some stars on there. Him and his wife are kicking some butt on that. Thank you, Glenn, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. You have a blessed week, man. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Chase. You take care.
All right, bam.
And that concludes another episode here on True Underdog. If you're interested in hearing more, make sure you subscribe at iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the YouTube channel. You can always visit trueunderdog.com, subscribe to all of them. Make sure you check out our newest episodes coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. True Underdog, baby.
Bam. True Underdog. Damn.